And on the first official UN World Happiness Day, we are looking this morning at the economics of happiness. We are very pleased to have the economist Dr. Kai Chan, who is an advisor to the Emirates Competitiveness Council, in the studio with us this morning to have a look at whether or not we can put a number on happiness and whether or not it would benefit governments to do so. Dr. Kai, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Tell me, why is the UN pushing happiness so heavily, not just in today's World Happiness Day, but they've also been encouraging governments to start looking at measuring happiness in the way that they measure other things, such as GDP or production, manufacturing, and add it to their indicators? Why is the UN concerned about this?
Well, policymakers have known for a long time that traditional measures of well-being, such as GDP, are inadequate in addressing the measures of welfare of nations. And I think the UN has also recognized that the inalienable right of people for development, of which happiness is an integral part of that. I think there's also in recognition of the fact that there are diminishing returns to income, so especially for countries who are already at a high level of income, that the burden of trying to produce extra income, the strains it may have on the environment, also on social strains, is not the best bang for buck in terms of increasing the overall welfare of societies.
There are only a few countries that are measuring happiness, though. I mean, Bhutan's been doing it for a long time, and we hear a lot about that. But we hear a lot about that because Bhutan's pretty much one of the only ones doing it. I mean, the UK has a measurement now. Mm-hmm. Thailand has a measurement, but that's pretty much it.
Well, Bhutan is an interesting study. They've been probably the pioneers of this. They've started that back about 40 years ago with their concept of the gross national happiness. This has actually turned into something more formal than the first thing that the king iterated, and they've actually turned that into an index where they do have indicators. You're right in the sense that there has not been up to this far hitherto many countries trying to quantify happiness. However, that is starting to change now. Over the last, from 5 to 10 years, the happiness, measuring happiness has become a very interesting topic among economists nowadays. And there have been things recently, such as the Gallup World Poll, which has been done in the last several years, as along as with the European Value Surveys. And these are the surveys that are being used right now for such reports, such as the World Happiness Report, which was released last year, and there will be one released this year as well in September.
It's all a very nice, warm, fuzzy concept, isn't it, happiness? But really, it's the result of something else in your life. It's a reflection of something that has gone before. Either suddenly you have water coming into your village, or you've got a brand new car or something. When you look around the world at the sort of hugely varying standards of living, happiness, there's no one such thing as happiness, is it? It's all very relative to where you live in the world.
Yeah, happiness is very subjective and very relative, which is one of the reasons why it's been very hard to measure in the past. But however, there's been a lot of research done over the years. And so happiness economists have now been able to identify certain key things which are robust to driving happiness. So certain things such as income, which is why I think GDP has been so important in the past and still continues to be very important, especially for countries who are not at the what we call the sufficiency level of income yet. However, there are many other things that economists have found which are being, robust drivers of happiness, including things such as a healthy life expectancy, social support, which is really basically talking about community, absence of corruption, generosity, which basically means charity, doing work for others. It makes people feel good in genuine ways, and also the freedom to make life choices. So these are, main pillars that economists have found being robust to driving happiness. And they do are robust across cultures as well. So these are items that we find that make people happy in the UAE, they make people happy in Africa, they make people happy in Europe, North America, all around the world, and to varying different degrees. And we also do know that there are certain differences, across regions, across cultures. For example, we do know that Latin American countries, they tend to be more happy, at least expressed through surveys, than you would expect through a lot of the basic pillars, which we think are drivers of happiness.
If you think that it takes more muscles in your face to frown than to smile, if you think that we possibly go out and spend more money when we're unhappy than happy, as retail therapy, if you think that perhaps we work harder or we're more focused in our jobs when there's certain uncertainty or unhappiness in that, we have to strive harder. Why is it so important to be happy rather than unhappy? I mean, well, unhappiness drives economies.
Well, actually, I would say that it's almost the other way around, in the sense that happier people are more productive people. So when you're happy, you know, you are producing, you know, better innovations, you are making better time at the office. You're also contagious as well. One of the great things about happiness is that it's contagious. It has spillover effects. So if you go into a room and everyone else is smiling, it makes you happy as well. And when you're happier, you actually are more productive, and you are more competitive in a sense as well, because, like I said, you drive other people as well in the office, and then you become more productive in your own work.
How easy is it, though, to measure happiness? I mean, I sat down with a lot of those world reports for happiness that you mentioned a few minutes ago when I was putting together a TEDx speech recently. They did TEDx at Jess at Arabian Ranches, and we looked at the pursuit of happiness. And having a look at all the polls, from the Gallup World Polls to the OECD Wellbeing Index to Legatum to the Happy Planet Index, putting them all on the floor and going through them with highlighters, I found a load of different answers. Some said that Australia was the happiest, some said Panama, some said Paraguay, some said Denmark, some said Costa Rica, some said Norway, some said Colombia. And you could come out of that thinking that no one was actually really sure.
Well, there are many different ways to measure happiness, and you know, by the different metrics, you know, you will get different results. However, you know, the one that was done by the Gallup World Poll, and which is the one the World Happiness Report is based upon, that one has been shown to be very robust. So that study has been back tested against, you know, other sets of measures, which we know should be very indicative of happiness. And so that one has been done very well. For instance, you know, we do know things such as, you know, happy people tend to, for example, have lower suicide rates, and they have other revealed actions such as that. And so we know that these surveys have, you know, have been backfitted to such indicators to show the robustness of the happiness measure.
And you've just come back from Ashman, haven't you? I understand there was a big well-being conference, a big happiness conference being held in Ashman yesterday.
Yes, there was a quality of life conference, a happiness conference yesterday held in Ashman. We brought John Helliwell, who's actually one of the editors of the World Happiness Report, to that conference, and he spoke on some of the drivers of happiness and how the UAE is performing in the World Happiness Report.
Well, happiness is relative to our surroundings, and you know, on the surface we look pretty happy here, but it's easier to make paupers smile than millionaires, and it's probably easier to make people in Calcutta happier than here in Dubai. If your happiness is so related to your surroundings and it's so subjective, why do people even bother to try and measure it?
Well, first of all, you need to be able to measure happiness to be able to affect policies that will have positive impacts on people's well-being in the country or wherever your constituency is. So the first thing is you need to be able to measure something if you want to be able to influence it. Secondly, your point about making somebody happier in Calcutta it being easier than over here, that's a very true thing that we know in happiness economics. This is the concept of diminishing returns to well-being from income. So we do know that at very low levels of income, by giving extra dirham of income, that you make a person very much happier. But when you are at already high levels of income, you know, to make that person one unit happier, it requires a lot more income. So that's why, for instance, you know, policymakers, you know, should pay attention to other drivers of happiness and you know, ensure that you know, we use the resources, the limited resources that we have, to ensure that we get the best bang for buck from in terms of well-being of society.
What do you see as the other drivers of happiness?
Well, there are things that we've mentioned, such as healthy life expectancy. That's a big driver. We also do know things such as social support, basically encouraging community. We do know that spirituality, not necessarily religion, but religion is also a big component of that, is a key driver of happiness. So for instance, people who report being connected to the community through a spiritual kind of way do report higher levels of happiness. Also, for instance, people who are married actually report higher levels of happiness than unmarried people.
Well, I know that the UAE at the moment is 17th on the that World Happiness Poll from the UN. We have different rankings on the different polls. I think we're 130th actually on the Happy Planet Index, but the eco footprint's quite a big part of that one. But I know we are very keen to move up the UN poll. What will the UAE have to do that?
Well, there are many things that the UAE can and should be doing to move up this pole. I think one of the things is just to promote the pillars that we've talked about. For instance, the healthy life expectancy, the social support, absence of corruption, generosity, and freedom to make life choices. We're doing very well already on GDP per capita. We're doing also very well on absence of corruption and all the other pillars, which is why we're ranked so high, 17, which is actually the first in the Arab world. So we're doing quite well, globally, and we're the leading country in the region. However, having said that, I do believe that the leadership of the country is very keen on moving up in this poll and, making us one of the happiest societies in the world.
Should the UAE be measuring happiness for itself, like Bhutan does, like Thailand does, like the UK has started its well-being index? Is that something we could or should be looking at here?
Well, we've recently, as ECC, partnered with the Earth Institute, who is the publishers of the World Happiness Report. So we are taking happiness very seriously, and we are looking at ways of measuring happiness. As I've mentioned, we cannot make appropriate policies to guide us, to better levels of well-being in this country if we don't start measuring it.
Now, we've had a text in saying, I was happy when I was in my teens living with my family and I had no money because I was a student. Talk about sort of our path through life and the sort of relative happiness. Does wealth, as it increases and you get it, does that sort of gradually and exponentially increase your happiness?
Well, definitely one of the things you talked about is the age factor. We do know that there happiness is U-shaped in age. So you tend to be happy when you're young. There are, I guess, very few responsibilities, when you're very young as a child, as a teenager. You get to the lowest point of your happiness, in your about early 40s. And I guess this is, what people call maybe your midlife crisis. And thereafter, you become happy again. And we do realize that people who are in their senior years actually report the highest level of happiness overall. In terms of the, money being a driver for it, as I mentioned, we do know that income is a key driver, especially at low levels of income. But, once you reach that sufficiency level, there are other areas which are more important.
So what you're saying is that people who are young and ignorant are happy because they're ignorant, and when you get to my age and your dotage, you're happy because you've no idea what's going on around you and you don't care. Is that what it is? Is it only people in the middle that actually understand what should make us happy and not?
Well, one of the things about the pursuit of money is that we have to be careful that just remember that the pursuit of money at very extreme levels really probably entails more unhappiness because when you look at things such as people who work long hours, we do know that, for instance, one of the things that robust to driving happiness is taking holidays, spending time with friends and family. And if people are trying to become, fabulously wealthy and they're spending, many, many hours in the office and not taking vacations, not spending time with friends and family, that actually leads to, unhappiness rather than happiness.
As I understand it, though, the happiness that we get from money, from income, tapers off. I don't know if it's the $120,000 mark. I seem to think it is. But it's also relative as to how other people are doing, such as we're happy if we're earning more than the guys living next door, but we'd be happier earning less as long as they were earning less too, if you follow me.
So that is something called the relative happiness, and so we do compare ourselves to our social circles. So as you've mentioned, there are very famous studies which kind of showed that people who are, for instance, earning 50,000 dirhams a month are much happier, in the situation where they're earning 50,000 and their peers earning 35,000 than the case where they're earning 60 and their peers earning 70,000. So this is something that is universal. I think there's a very much a relative level of happiness, which depends very much on, your standing in your social circle.
It's easy to understand what might make people unhappy, either loss of job or perhaps commuting every day on a crowded tube train to work. Is there any evidence to suggest that people who drop out a little bit of the rat race and who find alternative employment and alternative lifestyle, that they are much happier?
Well, we do know, for instance, that employment is a very key driver to happiness. So people who find fulfilling work are very much happier. And people who are unemployed, they find unemployment to be as stressful as having a death of a close family member. So that is the kind of stress that is associated with unemployment. However, in terms of looking at people who've, you know, dropped out of the rat race, we do know that there are a lot of people who, you know, anecdotally have shown that, you know, they're much happier out of that situation. And that, I think that's also something where policymakers, you know, can have some certain influence in. For instance, we do know that Europeans take, you know, many more holidays than, say, the Americans, where there's a lot of data and research on this topic. And we do know that, you know, for instance, given that your neighbor makes, you know, 50,000, you know, you want to work a little harder, you know, to make 60,000, because that makes you a little bit happier, because your relative income becomes a little higher. But at the same token, you end up making yourself more unhappy, because you spend more time, you know, trying to earn that extra money more by staying longer time in the office.
Well, Dr. Kai Chan, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Economist and advisor to the Emirates Competitiveness Council. It's been fantastic to speak to you.
Thank you.